Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 3, Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender, Text Number 5. Kalena panchatvam iteshu krishnaso. Lokeshu paleshu cha sarva hetushu. Tasmas tadasid kahanam gabiram. Yastasya pare bibi rajate bibu. Kalena. In due course of time, after millions and millions of years, panchatvam, when everything illusory is annihilated, iteshu, all transformations, kritsnasha, with everything within this cosmic manifestation, lokeshu, all the planets or everything that exists, paleshu, maintainers like Lord Brahma, cha, also, sarvahetushu, all causative existences, tamaha, great darkness, tada, then, asit, was, gahanam, very dense, gabiram, very deep, yaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, tasya, this dark situation, pare, over and above, abhivirajite, exists or shines, vibhu, the Supreme. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In due course of time, when all the causative and effective manifestations of the universe, including the planets and their directors and maintainers, are annihilated, there is a situation of dense darkness. Above this darkness, however, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I take shelter of His lotus feet. Purport. From the Vedic mantras, we understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is above everything. He is supreme above all the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. He is the supreme controller. When everything disappears by the influence of His energy, the cosmic situation is one of dense darkness. The Supreme Lord, however, is the sunshine, as confirmed in the Vedic mantras, Aditya Varnam Tamasa Parastat. In our daily experience, when we are on earth, we are in the darkness of night. The sun is always luminous somewhere in the sky. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Sun, always remains luminous, even when the entire cosmic manifestation is annihilated in the due course of time. Text number 6. Niyasya deva rishaya padam vibhur jantu punakor hati gantu iritum yatanatasya kriti vira vichestato duratyaya nu kramanaha kramanasa mat vatu. Mavatu, translation. An artist on stage, being covered by attractive dresses and dancing with different movements, is not understood by his audience. Similarly, the activities and features of the Supreme Artist cannot be understood even by the demigods or great sages. Certainly not by those who are unintelligent like animals. Neither the demigods nor the and sages nor the unintelligent can understand the features of the Lord, nor can they express in words his actual position. May that Supreme Personality of Godhead give me protection. Purport. A similar understanding was expressed by Kunti Devi. The Supreme Lord exists everywhere, within and without. He even exists within the heart. Savasya chaham riddhi sanavishto ishvara sarabhutanam riddheshe orjanatishtati. Thus it is indicated that one can find the Supreme Lord within one's heart. There are many, many yogis trying to find him. Dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashanti yam yoginaha. Nonetheless, even great yogis, demigods, saints, and sages have been unable to understand the bodily features of that great artist, nor could they understand the meaning of his movements. What then is to be said of ordinary speculators, like the so-called philosophers of this material world? For them it is impossible to understand. Therefore we must accept the statements given by the Supreme when he kindly incarnates to instruct us. We must simply accept the words of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and follow in their footsteps, that it may be possible for us to know the purpose of their incarnations. Janma karma tame divyam evam yoveti tatvataha tyaktvadeha punar janma naiti mam eti sorjana. If by the Lord's grace one can understand him, one will immediately be delivered, even within his material body. Material body will no longer have any function, and whatever activities take place with the body will be the activities of Krishna consciousness. This way one may give up his body and return home back to Godhead. In any case, Kunkundi says, Maya vikachanam. What's that? How does that verse go? Anam yoginam. That, my dear Lord, that you cannot be understood even by the great philosophers and the yogis, because you're covered by your curtain of yoga maya, and so how can we women who are less intelligent understand you? No, that's not it. But that's not the verse we're looking for. The next, maya vikachanam, is about the curtain being covered by your yoga maya potency. Yeah. So, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakasha Sarvasha Yogamaya Samavrita Mudoyam Navijananti Yoga Lokoyam Avyam Avyam. That Naham Prakasha Sarvasha, that I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yogamaya. And so the deluded world knows me not, I'm unborn and inexhaustible. So the idea of what is intelligence? Many people, Prabhupada once said, one person's asking another person, are you intelligent? And so the person's checking his wallet or his pocket and to see if there's any money. The idea is that if the person's intelligent, then he'll have money. And if he has no money, then he's not intelligent. In Kali Yuga, when there is no Dharma, and what is Dharma? As it says, tatas chanudinam dharma, sattvam socham dhamma shama, kalena balaya rajan, nakshantyayor balam smriti. So Dharma means, ultimately, what are the laws of this world, and ultimately what is actual religiosity. And where is Dharma found? Well, here it says, Tatashanudinam Dharma. That day after day in Kali Yuga, actual Dharma, that is actually what we're supposed to be doing and what we're not supposed to be doing, will be lost, will be forgotten. Tatashanudinam Dharma. Sattvam. Truthfulness. Ultimately, truthfulness is recognizing Krishna, his proprietorship over the material nature, the obligation of the living entities to serve him, just like the finger. There's an obligation of the finger to serve the whole body. If the finger declares its independence, that I don't like to serve the body, I'm going to act independently. That now we've established an independent state within the body called the finger. We don't listen to, we have our own laws, our own rules and regulations, and we definitely don't serve the body. Then the finger becomes useless. Similarly, being part and parcel of Krishna, being part of the creation, we're not independent. Everything is under Krishna's control, directly or indirectly, and therefore when we declare ourselves to be independent of Krishna, then the whole purpose of our existence is lost. Just like the purpose of the finger is to serve the body. And when it stops serving the body, then its purpose gets lost. The finger can't say, actually, I'm just meant to dance. I've become very creative. I don't like these other nine fingers. They keep on doing the same thing all the time. And I want to do my thing. They can do their thing, and I'll do my thing. They want to do their what they're inspired to do, they want to serve the body, let them go and serve the body, but I want to dance. I'm just going to dance all the time. So similarly, when the living entity decides he has some other purpose other than to serve Krishna, then his whole purpose is lost, because that's his only purpose. Of course, in the mature world, when we think about service, we think about simply duty. Dry duty. Someone says jump, and the only thing we ask is how high. So that kind of mentality, simply to become a robot, people are averse to it. They think that let me show my creativity, show my individuality, show my uniqueness, and then I can actually express myself as I really am. But actually what they're expressing is how they're being impelled by the modes of material nature. If a tiger chases after a deer and runs very fast, he won't get the Olympic medal for his endeavor. The only reward we'll get maybe is a good meal. But no human being can run as fast, at least in the sprinting, as a tiger chasing after the deer. But still people will try, thinking that this is an expression of their creativity, their individuality, their talents, their perfection. But what are they running for? What are they running from? And what are they running to? They're not running from anything. They're not running to anything. They're just wasting their time. And a number of other fools are watching them do it. At the end, nothing's been accomplished. Even they get their medal, they just put it in the drawer and everyone forgets about it. Till some other fool runs to get another medal. Therefore, without understanding what we're actually supposed to be doing, everyone just running around in circles, chasing after their tail, and never quite being able to catch it. Therefore, in Greece, there is that story of Sisyphus, who was pushing a heavy boulder up. He was in a hole. He was cursed to be in a hole with a heavy boulder, and his service, his job, was to push the heavy boulder up to the top of the hole and then hopefully push the boulder out. But it was arranged that as soon as he got the boulder up to the top, immediately would fall down, and he'd go back to the bottom of the hole and push the boulder up again. That's called frustration. So that's what the living entities are doing. Their main goal in the material world is simply to survive. Or as they say in English, in America, he who hits and runs away lives to fight another day. You got that one? He who hits and runs away lives to fight another day. So the main business in the material world is survival. If someone can survive, what is all these bank balances about? What are all these big houses about? What is all our athletic training about? What is taking our vitamin pills about? What is all about? Simply so we can survive in this body. Because that's the ultimate problem of material existence, just to live, to exist. There are so many factors trying to end our existence. They claim that, well, people look both ways before they cross the street, make sure that they don't get run over. Previously, when they're in the jungle, they look both ways before they cross to make sure no tiger would hit them on the way over. Now we look both ways to make sure no more dangerous entity called a car hits us. If a tiger tries to hit us, we have our sword or a knife. We can try to defend ourselves. But if a car hits us, the knife will do us no good. Maybe we can put a dent in the car before we get crushed. So everyone's trying to survive, and no one survives. In spite of all our great endeavor to survive, everyone has to leave their body, either today or in a few years. But people don't see that. Napashyati, napashyati. They don't see, they're not even questioning, why do I have to die? The scientists may say so many different things, that this body is made out of electrons and protons and neutrons, whatever. But who made it? Well, that you're not supposed to ask. It just came out of nothing. But somehow or another, out of the nothing that it came, with our intelligence, we can figure out how to stop everything from changing here. One day we'll discover a formula, and we'll put up our hand and tell the atom, according to their conception, my dear electron, stop. And the electron will say, yes, sir, and they'll stop. All the electrons will stop. Everything will stop, and then we'll live forever doing nothing, because everything stops, including ourselves. So people are living in this in imagination that somehow or another everything came out of nothing, and by the intelligence of the scientists, we can solve all our problems, especially old age, disease, and death. They never talk about having to take birth again, because that would admit that actually we're eternal and that they're just wasting their time. And what's the problem? Naha prakasha sarvasha. Krishna is not manifested. The missing link are not the apes. The missing link is Krishna. The missing link to our actual existence is Krishna. But because Krishna is not manifest to us, nothing makes any sense. Because we've added 1 plus 1 and we've gotten 5. And we're trying to convince everyone that that's correct. And anyone who says that 1 plus 1 is 2 must be a fool. It's called the emperor has no clothes. So similarly, as explained here, that with a little intelligence, we can see through the falsity of modern society based upon adharma. No truthfulness. They cannot even admit that their body is changing, but they're not changing. Therefore, they're eternal. Because if they do that, if they accept that, then that means, since they won't give up their sense gratification, their sinful activities, that means that they're going to have to face soon some unknown existence where they may have to suffer because of all the sinful activities that they've done. Therefore, they've made light out of the existence of God. You know, God is some old man sitting on a throne. Sometimes they depict him as having no face. All he has is a big scoreboard made by Apple now. He's gotten it because Apple came out with a new chip, and therefore God is rich enough, he can afford the new model. And anyone who goes before him, he types the name, what's your name? My name is Paul, P-A. How do you spell that? Paul, and then all the sinful activities and pious activities go up on the screen. God looks up and says, sorry about that, Paul. it was a bad life, right? I appreciate that. And then he takes the little tiny soul, and then he throws him into the burning fire. Oh, God. And all the angels gather around, because the most exciting thing that's happened there for a long time. They say, can you throw in another one, God? Wow, that was cool. Wow. Little fireworks. Wow, that one came out green. Can you throw in a red one, see what happens? So that's the conception of God. And if you're pious, you spend your whole life doing pious activities, then God hands you a little harp or a little horn, and you spend the rest of eternity. Yeah, glorious God, glorious God, glorious that old guy. Glory, boop, 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 glory God. And after a few hundred thousand billion years, you start thinking, wow, this is really boring. And they go up to God and say, God, please do me a favor. Can you throw me into hell? Because I heard at least there's some rock music down there. Something to dance by. So this conception of God is definitely not very attractive. And therefore, the only alternative people have is just to gratify their senses. They can't hear that they're not their body, because that has so many implications that they're eternal, and they may have to eternally suffer for all the sinful activities that they're doing. So they rather just close their minds to any real knowledge and simply listen to the news to come be distracted from reality. And what to speak of someone who explains the existence of Paramatma, who's watching us. We're afraid of the NSA, whatever else we've devised to spy on us. But to think that there's a person in our heart watching everything we're doing. He knows every internet address that we've ever watched. He can even tell us exactly whatever movie we've ever watched. The names of all the characters. Even we think we've forgotten, but he's recorded everything. He's super Santa Claus. He knows if you were good or bad. And everyone gets their reward at the end. So this is inconceivable, or it's not inconceivable, it's actually logical that there's a person giving us remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. If we thought, how can there be a person doing that for everyone, then we have to answer the question, why is it sometimes I can remember something and sometimes I can't? Why is it that sometimes I'm trying to get something and I can't do it? If it was actually coming from me, then why is it not under my control? And that there's a person who's so powerful that he can move the sun exactly in an orbit. So these people don't want to hear because they're addicted to their misery of material existence. And they're looking forward to just one, that one moment of pleasure that they can squeeze out of it, and that's sufficient to keep them bound up in trying to avoid death, birth after birth. But if one can hear about Krishna, even if one cannot understand completely about Krishna, if one can hear Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, beginning from our eternality to the fact that Krishna is our guide and he can guide us towards our eternality, our eternal existence, and that Krishna is actually our friend because he's giving us heat and light, he's giving us air and water, he's giving us food, he's giving us intelligence, he's giving us so many things to guide us towards an eternal existence. So if one can hear that, then one may change one's objective from simply wasting one's time in trying to fulfill desires that can never be fulfilled. And what is that desire? That I'm going to be here as the Lord of material existence. As I've often said, that I'm going to become Romeo, or I'm going to become Juliet, or I'm going to become Tarzan, or I'm going to become Jane, I'm going to become Mickey Mouse, or I'm going to become Minnie Mouse. That's material existence. Mickey Rat and Minnie Rat. That's all we're living here for. Imitating Krishna. But instead of trying to imitate Krishna, which is everything that goes on outside of Krishna consciousness, if we try to utilize our energy to become Krishna conscious, then instead of trying to imitate the body, the finger actually can do something useful for the body. The finger, when it tries to become the whole body, is simply living in illusion. But when it tries to do something for the whole body, then it actually becomes useful. And when we try to do something for the body, then Krishna reveals himself. Then we become, that's intelligence. Intelligence means to try to realize our eternality, try to realize the person who's controlling everything, try to realize our loving relationship with that person, and then we're actually intelligent. Otherwise, Krishna says we're unintelligent. Naham prakasha sarvasha yogamaya samavrita mudayam nabijananti lokayam ajam avyayam. They're never manifest as such foolish and unintelligent people. To them, I'm covered by my eternal creative potency, Yogamaya, and so the deluded world knows me not, whom unborn and inexhaustible. So if we serve Krishna, Krishna will reveal himself, and if we try to imitate Krishna in some way or another, then remain in the material conception of life, birth after birth, in some species of life. So I'll stop there. Thank you, Kala. Any questions or comments?
So the question is about, you spoke about this conception of God that we and that we go to heaven and we do the same thing. And how can we avoid that sadhana bhakti becomes like this, like boring?
Pay attention to it. Understand who we're doing it for and how to do it in such a way that it becomes meaningful to us. If we have this idea that we chant Hare Krishna and it's the same old tune, same old mantra, then we won't understand how Krishna and Krishna's name are not different. And therefore Krishna and his name will always remain different to us. Then we have to use our intelligence. Am I eternal? Is Krishna God? I've been chanting Hare Krishna. Is it actually boring? If I was chanting Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, how long can I do it? that would certainly become boring. But if I chant Hare Krishna nicely and pay attention, is it actually boring or does it actually become better? The more I put an effort into it, does it actually become nicer to me? So we have to be thoughtful. Tachchadidana muniyo jnanavairagya yuktaya. So thoughtful men, we have to become thoughtful, introspective. Anything else? I would do to Roy. After Avadutra.
I have some doubt that Krishna wants to give a Brahman realization to his devotees. Perhaps, yes, to Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. But if the devotee would experience the bliss of Brahman, he could give up bhakti.
No, Krishna wants to give all the realizations to this devotee, including Brahman. Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna. So, why, when you become conscious of Krishna, you don't realize his effulgence also? If you read the Goswami's literature, they're always, Krishna, his body is very impressive. It's the most beautiful object of existence. But also his bodily effulgence, and Srimati Radharani's bodily effulgence, are also quite attractive. So they're all, Krishna has so many attractive features. So why is that when we come into Krishna conscious, he doesn't also become conscious of Krishna's other features, like Brahman and Paramatma. He becomes conscious of everything about Krishna. But they all remind him of Krishna. They're not separate from Krishna. Just like if you become conscious of the tree, you become conscious not only of the roots, but the branches and leaves also. They're all appreciated. Anything else?
Yes, one more. Queen Kunti wanted Krishna to serve her family affection, to sever her family affection. But why if the Pandavas are devotees dear to Krishna? For example, would it be a good idea that I also sever all my affection for all devotees? But I wonder how.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about that. We have to worry about that. First, we have to develop affection for all the devotees before we can sever it. But that's explained. Queen Kunti, she didn't give up her spiritual affection for the Pandavas because they are related to Krishna, or for her relatives because they are all related to Krishna. She was talking about her material attachment, so-called material attachment to them. But she really didn't have any material attachment. This is just her humbleness. She was praying like that. But she loved her sons because they were all devotees of Krishna. But she was just praying as if she was an ordinary person. That's called humility.
Thank you for the lecture. I always get confused about the same point because I thought when Srila Prabhupada speaks about women being less intelligent, it means emotionally. And how does that mean we have less ability to understand scripture or like less ability to understand these concepts? Because I think even traditionally, like, women weren't given the chance to even understand them because they were always in the home. They were never sent to school and stuff.
No, that's not correct. Krishna consciousness is not an intellectual exercise by itself. It's a exercise of service to Krishna and to Krishna's devotees. So being in the home and serving, if the husband was a devotee, then the wife would also, she was a devotee, they'd have an equal opportunity to become Krishna conscious. Less intelligence means that the husband would probably have a greater opportunity, theoretically, to understand things. But the application of it was not only theoretical, it was emotional also. So if the woman would accept the Krishna consciousness, the guidance of her husband, and engage in Krishna service, then she would have an equal opportunity for spiritual advancement as her husband. But that's the way Krishna set it up. If everyone was equally intelligent in terms of how to become, if one person wasn't more emotional and the other person wasn't more intellectual, then the material world wouldn't go on. It wouldn't exist. But if women were, you know, like looked at a little child and they said, you know, now kid, you know, you have to get it together. You know, you were 3 months old. It's about time that you, you know, you actually got it together, understood everything properly. I've explained it to you at least 50 times that you're not this body and you keep on crying. So try to give up your lamentation. Unless women has some feeling towards their children, the world would, we can see now because women have lost their feelings towards their children, what a mess the world is in. And if men became like women and didn't have some feeling of trying to protect them, not only materially, but spiritually also, then that's what we have now. Create a horrible world where everyone's simply exploiting each other. No sense of duty, no sense of purpose. Men are supposed to understand more clearly what their duty is, fulfill it, and direct others to fulfill their duties in the family members. And the family members manifest what the object is in devotion to Krishna. So they're supposed to work together. Dutifulness and devotion. Understanding things clearly, and the conclusion is devotion. And when men become like women and women become like men, then the whole thing gets lost. Or as Prabhupada once told, when one of the Mataji said, was asking Prabhupada, is it true that women are less intelligent? So Prabhupada's answer was, if you think you're a woman, then you're less intelligent. Because we're not these bodies, we're not men and we're not women, we're Krishna's servants. And if we serve Krishna, then we'll become perfect. Whoever we think we are. We thought we were, at least. Anything else? Grandiose Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.